Welcome to the O Woman Podcast, where we discuss so many things about women's sexuality, bodies, thoughts, and lives. We'll talk about everything from our relationships to our orgasms to our children and our ovaries, and we'll share outstanding experiences and ordinary ones. I'm Emma, and a big open welcome to you. Thanks for joining me today for the show. This is episode 25, What Birth Control is the Best for You? This is something that was always really valuable for me to learn more about is my birth control options, because I've changed birth control throughout my life different times in different ways. I have different ideas about what really is the best for me, for my body, and for my choices. And just in case you didn't know, I wanted to talk a little bit about it, share my personal opinions about certain things, and share my experiences with birth control. Today, I'm not recording from the car. I'm recording from the basement by the wood stove, since it's a chilly night. If you hear any noises in the background, it's probably the dog running around, or Jason, maybe running around with the dog, or even the little baby chickens in the background that we now have some of that we're taking care of inside of our house. So if you hear peeping, that's probably what you're hearing. So I did, I looked up a couple things, tried to find some really good, you know, informational spreadsheets about actually the basics about birth controls and stuff. And you can really find this information pretty much anywhere online. But I just wanted to give you a verbal overview that includes my personal thoughts about each one. To me, there are two different categories of birth control. So to me, there's really hormonal and non-hormonal birth control. And I know a lot of healthcare providers and doctors, they break it up that way too. And ideally for myself, I think that having a non-hormonal type of birth control is going to be better for your body in the long run. I know that, you know, different statistics say different things about birth control, and, you know, what can benefit you and what can't. Like some research says that the pill, can help with, you know, different aspects of your period that are a problem, like heavy period or things like that, and stuff like that. But I've always really thought deep down inside that if you didn't have hormonal birth control, that would be better for us. But of course, hormonal birth control is the most effective, and so a lot of women choose it. I mean, I choose it. That's what I use. But I really wish that I wasn't using hormonal birth control. And so the idea of getting an IUD has come up a couple different times. Jason and I have talked about it. And my friend recently got one, and so I wanted to share a little bit about her story, and then also why that, even though it's, you know, it hurts, even though, why that still would be appealing, because you're not, if you choose the copper kind and not the hormonal kind, you're not going to have hormones, extra hormones in your body that your body doesn't need because you weren't born with them. So they're just an extra thing that isn't really something that's probably good for you in the long run. So if you're thinking about non-hormonal versus hormonal, some of the major hormonal birth controls that there are is the first one you think of is the birth control pill. And there's two different kinds of birth control pill. There's the kind that is just the regular pill that we think of. And then there's also the kind that is just the progestin pill, only that. And that is the kind that I use. So they're equally effective. They have the same effectiveness rate, which is like, I think, 22 to 99%. It's different sheets you look at. The one I'm looking at now is telling me that statistic. So not as effective as the IUD or that, the Nexplanon, for example, the implant, which to me is just very scary, and I can explain that more later. But the IUD is the most effective birth control that I've ever heard of and that I've ever read about. But the pill is also really effective too. The only problem with the pill is you have to take it every day, which that a lot of people don't like having to do that. I don't like having to do that, but luckily I am such a homebody. I'm usually at home at the same time every night, and so it's not a problem for my alarm to go off for me to be reminded to take it. It is a problem if you have, you know, a schedule that's complicated or you travel a lot. It's hard to remember to take that with you, and it's hard to remember to take it, especially if you're out to dinner or something when your alarm goes off. You're thinking, oh, crap, I don't want to go to the bathroom to go take my birth control in the middle of dinner. So that's something to think about. Also, one thing that my friends learned about the pill when they first started taking it when they were like 14 or something was that it helps with period issues, like your periods can become more regular or you can have less cramping and stuff. One of my friends actually had a condition where she bled during her periods way more than your body is supposed to, so it made her anemic over time. And so she was prescribed the pill so that it would make her periods less heavy and it wouldn't be such a medical issue. So there's lots of reasons to take the pill besides, you know, just birth control. Supposedly the pill can improve PMS symptoms, which I have never noticed. I feel like I am a little bit more PMSing when I'm actually on the pill. My body doesn't regulate itself quite the right way. And one thing I'm reading here says that the pill that isn't the progestin-only pill can help prevent cancer of the ovaries, which surprises me, and I honestly sort of doubt that. But I haven't read anything saying anything about that, so I can't say for sure either way, of course, because I haven't read any research. And one thing that, when I was doing the research, that I got some conflicting information about with the pill is that you can get pregnant immediately after stopping using the pill. And I know that you theoretically can, but a lot of people I talk to, it takes them a while to actually, like, get all the hormone out of their system. It takes them a couple months at least. And so they don't get pregnant during that time. And it seems like it makes sense to me to wait to try to get pregnant until after you're sure all that extra hormone and stuff is out of your body so that your body is handling the pregnancy in the most natural, healthy way that it can. Some of the negatives with the pill is it changes your body sometimes. You get bigger boobs or you get, you know, you gain weight or you have some nausea or you have maybe your period is a little spotty. You have spotty periods throughout different types of the month. And I have noticed that with myself lately. Not when I first started taking just the regular pill. But lately it has been that I almost have like two periods. Like I'll have a period when I'm supposed to, but it's really light. And then I'll have like kind of another period in the middle of the month and it's become very annoying. So I'm really thinking about changing my birth control sometime soon. And that's one reason why I wanted to do the podcast today was I wanted to remind myself of my birth control options because I'm thinking about switching to something different. Also, one thing is I chose the lowest dose pill you can get that has the least hormone in it but still be effective because I was trying to put less hormone in my body. And that could have something to do with the fact that I'm spotting a little bit. Maybe my body's trying to take over control and battling the pill. I don't really know. But another thing is if you're concerned about, you know, getting STDs or HIV if you're having multiple partners and things like that, obviously the pill doesn't protect against that. So in that case, you would need to be using a condom at the same time. And I always advise people, if you do not know the person and you're in a committed relationship with this person, even if you know them and you're not in a committed relationship, you need to be using a condom. You need to be using some kind of protection. I did another podcast recently about why it's so important to get tested for STDs and STIs, and I stand by that. It's also so important to protect yourself against them. So if you're having sex with someone that you don't know their sexual history, you need to be protected definitely from pregnancy and definitely from STDs and HIV. So the first thing you think about when you think about birth control is the pill when you think about hormonal birth control specifically. There's also the patch, which I don't know that much about. It seems annoying to have a patch stuck to your skin all the time, but that has the same effectiveness apparently as birth control pills. And the bonus to that is that you don't have to every day take a pill. You stick the patch on for 3 weeks, you leave it on, and then you take it off for a week, and that's when you have your period. Same problem though with the pills. It clearly doesn't protect you against HIV or STDs, so you have to be double careful with that. And then we come to my favorite method of birth control that I've used in my life, which is the ring. So I've used the Nuva ring, and it was a long time ago when I used it. Back then, it was a lot cheaper to get, and now it's way more expensive. And so that's why I don't use it anymore, because it's just too much money, although I really loved using it at the time. And the main reason I chose it was because back then, I don't know if it's still the case, but it had less hormone in it than any other birth control pills on the market, and that was a big benefit to me. It has the same level of effectiveness as the pills or the patch, but like the patch, you put it in for 3 weeks, and you forget about it. It just kind of hangs out in your vagina. One size fits all kind of a situation. And it doesn't fall out, as you might think. And it doesn't get stuck up in your uterus, as you could maybe think. It hangs out there. It doesn't go anywhere. And then you just, like, reach up and pull it out with your finger. It's like the size of a hairband, kind of. And flexible. And you don't even feel it. And then you put it in its little, you know, package, throw it away, and have your period for a week, and then you put a new one in. I really loved using the NuvaRing. It was really entertaining, just in the same way that the post I did about, or the podcast I did about the Diva Cup is entertaining, because you're like actually hands-on with your body, which is such a good thing. So I loved it so much. But if you're having sex with someone that you don't know their history, with the NuvaRing, you still need to use a condom or some kind of protection against STDs, once again. So those are some of the top hormonal birth control pills that you think of. And then there's a couple others, like, that I don't really know very much about, like the implant that I mentioned earlier, and that's apparently over 99% effective, as well as the shot, like Depo-Provera. That's a little bit less effective, 97 to 99, they say, which still seems to beat out birth control pills. So the shot, you get it like every 3 months, and you don't have to take, obviously, a pill every day. And according to the sheet I am glancing at, you can use it while breastfeeding, which surprises me because it is a hormone. And I would be very hesitant to use any method of birth control that was hormonal while I was breastfeeding. Just because you don't really know, you know, how that could affect, you know, what your baby's absorbing. But I also do not have a child yet, and I have not read all the research explaining why certain birth control pills may or may not be safe, you know, when you're breastfeeding. So I leave that up to you to check that out, or I'll be checking that out sometime soon when I decide to have a kid. But before then, I don't actually know that much about that, so I'm not going to claim to know more about that than I do. So the implants, it looks like, it's from when I had seen stuff about it before, it looks almost like a little strip of material, and they implant it under your skin, usually in your upper arm. And it can last for like up to 3 years, and you clearly don't have to do anything. You just keep that for 3 years. Now this is a little weird to me though. After 1 year, it's possible for you to not have any period at all with this, which I know a lot of commercials now, when they have these new pills where you just have a period 4 times a year, you know, they say, oh, it's easier, it's better. That honestly freaks me out on a personal level, because my body is cyclical. It should be on a cycle to me. I feel like I want to have a period so that I'm reminded that I am a cyclical person. You know, women are on cycles. So I don't like the idea personally of having less periods than I'm supposed to, or having none, especially. I would feel very confused about my body. But that's also because I've never really had uncomfortable or crampy, very crampy periods. So if I was someone that had really horrible periods, I might think differently. So let's see. Talked about the implant, and then we have the shot, which, like I said, works for 3 months, as opposed to the implants for about 3 years. And apparently, if you were trying to get pregnant right after your shot, you know, runs out after 3 months, there can be a delay in getting pregnant. So I suppose there's still some hormone in your system that's keeping that from happening. And if you're having any side effects from having the shot, like not having a period, or you gain weight, or you get a little depressed, which apparently is a side effect, so that doesn't sound so great for the shot anyway. Apparently, those side effects could last for up to like half a year after the shot has kind of expired. So to me, so far as hormonal birth control pills go, or hormonal birth control goes, that seems like my least favorite option is the shot. Plus, who likes to get a shot? And then I'm going to say the implant's scary too, because do I really want a strip of something implanted under my skin and my arm? Personally, no. But it's up to you, clearly. This is information for you to use as you will. And then we come to the IUDs, which I think are such interesting inventions. IUDs have actually been around for a really long time, but not in the way that you think of them. In areas of, I believe it's Africa, but in areas where they have camels that they use, like in caravans and stuff in the desert, for many, many hundreds of years, it's been a thing where they'll put like a peach seed or something like that in the uterus of their camels to keep them from going into heat. So it keeps all the other camels under control. Because if you have a bunch of camels that are trying to work that are in heat, and then other camels are trying to hump them, it's going to be very annoying, and you're not going to get anything done. So that, you know, that's an early method of an IUD. And when I used to volunteer on a horse farm, I learned from the vet that came to check out one of the female horses that They put big marbles sometimes in the uteruses of horses to keep them from going into heat. Now, at a certain point, the horse's body or the camel's body gets used to that object being in there, and it realizes it's not pregnant, and it sort of starts to override the system and goes into heat anyway. So at that point, you take the marble or the whatever out for a little while, and you let their body re-regulate, and then you put it back in a few months later, and then it kind of starts over as a fresh method of birth control because the animals aren't going into heat. So IUDs have a really long history. The concept of putting something in your uterus to keep your body from getting pregnant because your body thinks it's pregnant already is kind of old. And so I think that's really interesting. So the two IUDs, there's the one that's the progestin ID, and then there's the copper IUD. And I know that my mom used the copper ID for a lot of her young adult life, and she really, really, really loved it. And my friend just got the copper IUD because she didn't want to do hormonal birth control anymore, and she wanted a long-term, you know, birth control. Since the copper IUDs, you can keep them for up to 12 years. So if you're looking for a long-term birth control, this is going to top the list. And then some of the progestin IUDs with the hormones in them, there's one that's like 3 years and one that's 7 years that you have to take it out at a certain point and put, you know, put another one in. But if you don't know what an IUD looks like, it just looks like this little T-shaped thing that goes and hangs out in your uterus, and it has a little string that comes off of it. You're supposed to be able to kind of check that string and make sure it's still in place. You can kind of reach up really far and feel it. But my friend just got the copper IUD, and she did a lot of research about it, and she was excited, but apparently she didn't realize that it actually goes in your uterus when she was looking it up. She thought it went, I don't know, in her next to her cervix or in her vagina area. So she did not anticipate the amount of pain she would feel, especially when she didn't take any, you know, aspirins or Tylenols before she went to have the IUD put in. And she said it just took like 10 minutes or something, the whole thing. But she just wasn't really prepared for how intensely invasive it felt and how much it really hurt. Like, she thought she was going to pass out. But even considering that, knowing that, of course, it's going to be invasive, it's going in your uterus. To me, this would be my top birth control choice, even though I've not done it yet. The copper IUD, I really like it as an option because I know in my family there's a good history of it, my mom liking it and it working. And just the fact that it lasts for 12 years and it doesn't have any hormones in it. So you don't have to worry about that extra stuff going into your body, which is really one of my top concerns. So for me, I'm thinking more about, are there hormones going into my system that I really shouldn't have there? And how convenient is it really? And part of my decision too is how cheap is it? So when I first looked into getting the IUD years and years ago, Jason and I had a timeline of like, oh, we'll have kids in 3 years. So maybe it wouldn't be economical to necessarily get an IUD now, because I was going to have to pay full price back then because I didn't have insurance. And so we looked at how much it cost per month, and it was not that much cheaper really than just continuing to do the cheap birth control pills. But that was when we were thinking we'd have kids in 3 years, and our timeline has extended. So I really freaking wish we'd gotten the IUD back then. Because you don't have to keep it in for 12 years. You can go and get it removed because you want to start having kids, you know. So I wish we'd done that, but at this point, our window is definitely 2 or 3 years with kids, and it wouldn't be worth it for me to get one now. So I'm going to stick with the birth control pills, and then as soon as we're done having kids, my plan now anyway is to go for the copper IUD. So I don't have any hormones, it lasts a long time, and I don't ever have to think about it, which is really exciting. So now we're kind of moving towards talking about the non-hormonal birth control types. I mean, we talked about the non-hormonal IUD, but all the other ones we just talked about had hormone in them. So some of the classics you know of are, you know, the condom, which is pretty effective considering how super easy it is to buy and how easy it is to use. Supposedly 85 to 98%, which is pretty good. Now, you have to be careful. You can't rip the condom or it's completely ineffective. But, you know, it's a cheap, safe thing. And the good thing is it also protects you against STD and HIV as opposed to the other birth controls that aren't also a barrier. They don't do that. They just protect against pregnancy. So that's the really cool thing about a condom. And it seems like such a simple invention to be so effective, but it's really nice that it is. And so accessible too, which is a really good thing. So the thing about a condom, though, is you have to make sure that you're putting it on the right way, not putting it on backwards. You have to make sure, you know, you squeeze the tip a little bit so the air bubble in there isn't filled with air, and then it pops in the middle of sex, you know, so you have to know what you're doing. Putting on a condom with your teeth, or, you know, that sort of sexy vision, it's a stupid idea. Don't do that. If you're going to use it, unless you're using it just for fun and not actually for any effect. And then why would you do that? I mean, come on. So the good thing is you can buy it, you know, anywhere. And then you can also, you know, put it on as a part of foreplay. I would just skip the teeth thing because you could totally puncture a hole in it and then it's not going to work. And you can use it for all types of sex too. Anal sex, oral sex, vaginal sex, which is nice. And like I said, it protects against HIV and STIs. Now, some of the negatives is that it can decrease, you know, how much you feel of the sexual experience, both for men and for women. And I've noticed, too, sometimes it makes noise and it kind of crunches, which isn't really that fun when you think about it. It's kind of a mood killer. And then, of course, the big problem of if it actually breaks, then what do you do? As soon as it breaks, you know, then you're at a risk for pregnancy and for, you know, getting an STD and HIV. So you have to be really careful. And then I know much less about the female condoms. Those are on average less effective. They're like 79% to 95% effective. But just like with a male condom, you have to put them on every time you have sex, get a new one. And apparently it's kind of hard to put in and it might move out of place because it's got to actually stay in the proper spot inside of your vagina. If it moves out of the way, then you might have a leak, you know. So this seems to me much less of a good choice than the male condom if you're going to go with that kind of thing. And then there's the withdrawal method, which I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, some people use it, I guess. But as a real reliable method of birth control, you cannot count on that. Because there are sperm that are in pre-ejaculation, too. So if you're doing it and you're in a committed relationship and you're really like, well, if we get pregnant, whatever, we'll have a kid, it'll be fine. Okay, whatever, go for it. But if you're really trying not to have a kid, and if you're really not in a relationship where you really would want to raise a kid with someone, then I would not do that because it's not really that effective. My sheet is actually saying that it is surprisingly more effective than I would think, 73% to 96%. But I don't know, but that's still a, you know, 1 in 4 chance in some cases of getting pregnant. And that, it doesn't seem like very good odds to me. But I guess the pro is it doesn't cost anything. And I guess that's the only pro. It doesn't cost anything. Because also the negative would be, you know, you pull out before you have an orgasm. If you're a guy, you're kind of just having an orgasm, you know, on someone's body or on the sheath. That doesn't sound quite as fun to me, but I'm not a guy. I don't know. And then it doesn't work if somebody accidentally, you know, forgets to pull out or they forget that that's supposed to happen. And of course that doesn't protect against any STDs or HIV just because all of your bodily fluids are still mixed around. So, you know, that's a big deal too. So next up on the non-hormonal birth control option list is the diaphragm, which is roughly as effective as, it looks like a little bit less effective than the male condom, a little bit more effective than the female condom, it seems like. Now, I don't know anyone that's actually ever used a diaphragm. I feel like these were a big hit a decade or two ago. But you have to use it with spermicide, so that's kind of an extra thing that you have to think about. And you've got to, like, go to a doctor to actually get them to fit you for one and show you how to use it because it's related to the size of, you know, your vagina and your cervix and all of that stuff in there. Now, you can use one diaphragm for apparently a couple years, which is positive, and it's not that expensive when you think about how many times you'd use it. But you have to use spermicide, so that's an extra thing to think about. And you can't use it when you're on your period, apparently. I guess that affects like how it actually works or how it stays in place. So having period sex wouldn't be an option then. And apparently it raises the risk of getting a bladder infection, which I did not know. So then there's the rhythm method, which I feel like is very similar in risk to the withdrawal method. Let's see. Is that the case? Let me look at my numbers here. Actually, it seems to be somewhat less effective than the withdrawal method, which I which is interesting. So, you know, they call it natural family planning sometimes. And if you're in a relationship, once again, where if you got pregnant, you would think, okay, well, we'll have a kid. It's fine. You know, it's not the end of the world. Or, you know, you actually want to do that. It wouldn't stress you out too bad. Then this is definitely a good option for you because there's no hormones, obviously, but it's a kind of a lot of commitment. You have to like measure your temperature. You have to check your vaginal mucus, make sure it's like this texture or that texture. And you have to like chart your periods, which might actually be really fun for you. It would be fun for me if I was doing that, but I wouldn't want to do that all the time. That's the thing. And you have to avoid sex on certain days. So it's really very inconvenient when you think about it, based on, you know, getting in the mood or having a romantic night is, you can't have sex certain days, but what if you both want to? Like, what are you going to do? So that's kind of negative, but it's also pretty free because all you really need is a thermometer. And there's no hormones, of course. Now, one negative thing about the rhythm method that I didn't know until now is that it doesn't work that well if you have irregular periods, which makes a lot of sense because if you're charting your cycle based on your periods and all that other stuff, if it's not the same amount of days between it each time, you're not really going to be able to fully chart when you're going to be most fertile and when you're ovulating and stuff. So you might miss a day and your risk for getting pregnant would go up because you weren't actually sure, you know, if it was a fertile day or not. And then spermicide, which kind of goes with the diaphragm, but can also be used just as its own birth control. I don't know. To me, this is a lot. It's in the same level of effectiveness as withdrawal. It appears to be less effective in general than all of the other types. And the good thing is, though, is you can buy it at a lot of stores, and that can be kind of part of your foreplay experience. There's, you know, they have it in cream, they have it in like an insert or like a foam. There's lots of different types of spermicide. But this, it is interesting. It might actually raise the risk of you getting HIV, which is really interesting. And it also might irritate, you know, your vagina or his penis based on just what's going on, what's in the spermicide, what the materials are, that kind of thing. And it can also be pretty messy if you're not really into messy sex or messy sex that isn't normal body fluids, then it would be kind of an annoying thing to do. So this definitely wouldn't be on my top choice. And then of course we can't forget about the like emergency contraception, the morning after pill, those things. So in the case of an accidental or unplanned sexual experience or, just realizing after the fact, oh gosh, I have not taken my birth control pills for an extended period of time. That's always an option to go get kind of a plan B thing. So one thing about that, though, is the sooner you take it after you realize you need to, the better it's going to be for you as far as making sure that you're preventing pregnancy. And you can take it apparently for up to 5 days after having unprotected sex and expect that it's going to be somewhat effective or pretty effective. So also, though, once you take it, supposedly you're supposed to start a birth control method right after it just to kind of continue having a hormone in your body to keep you from avoiding the pregnancy. But it's pretty available. It's available at pharmacies and, you know, you can go to a health center and get it. And the good thing is now finally people, women and men of any age can get it without a prescription, which is really good. You can get it over the counter. So that's really good for people that, you know, are in a weird situation and they really need it. Or a younger person that's had a weird sexual experience that they really want to, you know, take care of themselves and stuff. So that's kind of the overview of the birth control options that are on the table. And as I said before, I would say that for me, my priorities would be, okay, I don't want anything that's hormonal, my priority, even though I'm taking something hormonal now. And also something that's pretty cheap, something that is not something you have to deal with every day. So those would be my priorities. You might have different priorities. You might be thinking mostly of how much something would cost. Or you're not worried about if it's hormonal at all. You're just wanting to make sure that it lasts as long as possible. The longest thing. So to me, that looks like the copper IUD lasts 12 years. But then there's also the hormonal kind of IUD, which is 3 or 7 years. And that implant, which is like 3 years. So think about what's best for your body, how you feel about your birth control now and what you might want to do in the future. Talk to someone that you trust about it. It could be a family member. It could be your doctor if you trust your doctor. And find out what, you know, they think would be good for you based on, you know, when you want to have kids. If you want to have kids next year, probably wouldn't be a good idea to get an IUD because you have to take it right out again. So just think about what's right for you. It's just always nice to know all of the options, definitely, when it comes to everything involving sexuality, but especially your reproductive rights, because, I mean, you're in charge of those. It's your choice. It's your body. You get to do what you want. So, thanks for listening again today to the O Woman podcast, listening to my little spiel about birth control options. Hopefully you learned something and you got some really good ideas about what you really want to be doing with your birth control. Please remember to like us on Facebook at O Woman podcast. Also on the website, I want to remind you, at owomanpodcast.com that I've recently, opened a page that shows you the recent episodes if you've been trying to find them and you've had a hard time. So it's just near the top of the menu. It's called Recent Episodes, and you should find all of the past episodes so far. Make sure that you're following us on iTunes, and be sure to send me an email if you have any questions or comments or thoughts about idea for a future episode, emma@owomanpodcast.com. Once again, I love talking to you guys. I can't wait to hear from you, and I will talk to you tomorrow. Bye.